It's time for Twig this week in Google. It's Google I.O. Day, and we've got all the good stuff from the keynote. Stacey Higginbotham is joining us. Oddly enough, she's in Seattle for Microsoft's Build Developer Conference. Jeff Jarvis is at Google I.O. He'll join us from the press tent. And Kevin Toefel of AboutChromebooks.com. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 456, recorded Tuesday, May 8th, 2018. All the good stuff at Google I.O. This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from Google. And there is a lot of news from Google today. It's, in fact, not just from Google, from everybody, because developer conferences are going on simultaneously. That's why Stacey Higginbotham, we've sent her to Seattle to cover Microsoft's Build for Stacey on IoT.com. Hi, Stacey.
Hello. I actually sat next to your Windows Weekly people the other day.
Told me. They said it. We met Stacey. We crossed the streams.
Indeed.
How nice. How nice. So I take it you're there mostly because of the IoT, any IoT announcements Microsoft might
have. Yeah, it was a big year for IoT for them. I'm sure you guys covered it yesterday.
I would love to hear more. AI on IoT, which is combining not one, but two buzzwords in one.
I was
going
to say two acronyms.
Two kind of meaningless buzzwords in one. It's amazing. Now, we sent Jeff to Mountain View. Because he's at Google I.O., Jeff Jarvis from BuzzMachine.com. Hi, Jeff.
I am at the press tent, which is noisy, and I'll mute and not know what I'm talking, but here we are among journalists. Hello, say Google Android people. Hello.
Oh, look at that good-looking bunch. That's nice. I love it that Google does their events, and I bet, Stacey, you're a little jealous. They do their events at Shoreline. It's outside. The weather's beautiful. In fact, I don't know if you knew, Jeff, but all through the keynote, we heard bird song.
There were birds flying around, you know, Sundar and all over. And I'm wondering if one's going to land on the stage or poop on the stage. But no, they don't.
Also joining us, we've assigned him to his own home base, Kevin Toefel. By the way, Kevin, of course, is Stacey's partner on the IoT podcast. But he has a new enterprise he started last month, AboutChromebooks.com. Hi, Kevin.
Howdy. Yeah, thanks for sending me to my home office. I appreciate that. Yeah, we're saving on the expenses today.
I didn't send anybody anywhere, but I'm pretending that we assigned people to these events. So, but Kevin, it's great to have you. It's great to have all three of you here to talk about it. And I think we will, if you wish, talk about other things. And I'm sure there's lots to talk about. In fact, I've been following your writing posts about Crostini, which unfortunately Google did not announce at all. They didn't say anything about Chrome OS, and it's my guess that they may be doing that at another keynote. There's one starting in a little bit for developers, right?
There is. The developer keynote starts in 16 minutes, so I'm going to kind of cheat and watch it muted next to me because I want to see all the Chromebook stuff, maybe some Android things for me and Stacey on the IoT podcast and whatever else they want to talk about.
If you have, if something breaks, you can just jump in and say, hey, they just announced something. But briefly, because I know Jeff will be interested in this. He's a Chromebook user. I am too. I have the new Pixelbook. What is Crostini?
Crostini is a project that Google has been working on, and we should see it on at least the Pixelbook with other devices to follow in the next, I'll say, 3 to 6 weeks. If you're on the developer channel, you can enable Project Crostini. What it is it actually runs a container, a separate sandbox container on your Chromebook. and it runs a full version of Linux. And what that does is it helps bridge the remaining app gap, because we have Android app support now. But if you want to develop apps or do something else where an Android app isn't going to cut it, you can run full Linux apps on your Chromebook. There's no security issue involved there, because it's not, you're not in developer mode. You're actually running regular Chrome OS. Google's worked really hard to make it seamless, safe. I've already installed Android Studio, so developers, if you use an IDE to create anything, any kind of apps, you can do that, or will be able to do that soon on the Pixelbook with other Chromebooks to follow as they continue to evolve that.
I love this idea because, so can you choose your Linux as you can with, by the way, apparently Google developers have a taste for toasted bread products, because Crouton, which is precedes Crustini, allowed you to using Chroot and defeating the secure boot, install Linux, a real Linux, any version of Linux on your Chromebook. Is this any version of Linux, or is it kind of a special version? How does it work?
It comes with Debian Linux.
Debian,
right now.
Very nice.
Yeah, they may change that, but for now it's Debian. And
I'm happy with that. That's a great choice.
So can you do anything you could do with Linux in that sandbox?
Correct. You can. You get a Linux terminal that works just the same as regular Linux.
Wow.
And then you can install whatever packages you'd like from wherever you want that are supported. They don't have graphics or GPU acceleration yet, so don't get excited about if you play games on Steam. That does work. You can install it, but the frame rates are terrible. They're working on that. And again, this is the kind of stuff I've been tracking over at About Chromebooks now for the past month, and really excited about it.
Can you use a GUI, or is it so slow that it's not even?
No, I don't see any way to enable a GUI yet. And to be honest, I don't think that would be a good idea, Leo, because you really want two user interfaces, two graphics.
You already have a GUI, so just make it. So the apps, the Linux apps, are really a window on top of Chrome OS.
That's correct. They're nice. Resizable windows.
Am I muted now or not?
You're not.
Okay, sorry. I can't see. So, so Kevin, does it affect the overall operation of the Chromebook Pixel? I mean, does it? Is it taking up too much memory? Too many tabs open. Do you notice any other impact of running that?
So that's a great question, Jeff. I haven't really seen any impact, and I've been monitoring some of the hardware resources doing this. But I don't want to say too much, because I suspect Google has not yet optimized for performance yet, especially because it's only in the dev channel. I would say, though, you're not going to want to, spend $250 on a Chromebook and expect to do this and have it done well. You're going to want gobs of memory and storage and so on, and a good CPU, to be honest.
Now, for the first time, I'm sorry I didn't get the high-end Pixelbook. I got the entry-level Pixelbook, and I wish I had the faster processor and more RAM.
They're going to give out something to us today here. We don't know what. Oh. Maybe it's a Pixelbook. I doubt it.
Wouldn't that be nice, huh? We'll talk more about that. And Kevin, if they say anything during the developer keynote that you want to jump in with, please don't hesitate. But obviously, the big story this week on This Week in Google is Google I/O and the keynote, which just wrapped up minutes ago, and started off with Sundar Pichai making a joke about. I thought it was pretty funny, actually. The big emoji snafu at Google. He did say, we got the cheeseburger wrong, but I got to say, I'm a vegetarian, so I didn't know. They fixed it, put the cheese on top. But then he said, I don't understand why the foam was floating on the beer in our emoji, but we have fixed that as well. But he did it with good humor, and I thought that was a great way to kick the keynote off.
I would have rather that he kicked it off like Satya kicked off Build yesterday with a nice little thing about ethics and privacy and actually pro-GDPR kind of stuff. But that's just me.
It sounded like Sundar was going to.
Yeah, you're right. He was headed there, because you think of, Facebook had to do the confession of sins and penance, mea culpas, right? And Microsoft did that. And they never really, one of the Europeans here said they never mentioned privacy. And with all these new features and all these new ways things are going to listen to you all the time, it is an issue, and it would have been nice if they'd mentioned it more.
It actually almost felt like with some of the features they talked about that Google was doing the opposite, was saying, look, we know a lot about you, and we're going to make sure that we take advantage of that to surface useful tools for you.
And that is the trade-off.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is.
But in fairness, they didn't mention privacy specifically, but if you heard the right buzzwords, they sort of did. Because when they talked about a lot of the features we're going to discuss with machine learning, they said this is either on-device or this is on-device and cloud with TPU. So when they say on-device, that lends itself to some aspect of privacy, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure that's why they're doing it, although they didn't really even... they didn't really even acknowledge that. They just, it was more, it sounded like more about performance, and they were actually very interested, I think, to talk about the hybrid. They're even doing it on the self-driving vehicles, the hybrid of having some intelligence on the device or on the car and still using the cloud and GP and TPU to add more smarts, which I think is not a bad way to go. It's a little scary in a car if you lose your connection. I hope the car doesn't drive into a wall.
Well, yeah, you have to plan. That's why they have to add that intelligence at the edge, because right. connections in cars are
right
variable.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. I guess we could just go in order. Do you want to go in chronological order? Might as well. They did. It's funny because Microsoft yesterday talked about diabetic retinopathy, and you would think this is like the illness of the moment, because so did Sundar Pichai, predicting cardiovascular risk using your retina. And really what it's about is machine learning. And in fact, it can go beyond that. It can actually, using your retina, do a lot more. And I guess this, I wonder if this ties into the Lively stuff they're doing with those smart contact lenses. I don't know.
I assume it's because they have an amazing database of training data.
Right.
So, I mean, if you've been doing contact lens studies, for example, I bet you have a lot of pictures of retinas.
He showed the demo we've showed actually on the show of multiple people talking at once and the AI's ability to distinguish the different voices. Funnily enough, so does Sundar Pichai yesterday. You know, this is a problem because the overlapping keynotes don't give them a chance to change their content.
Wait, you keep saying Sundar Pichai, but
I mean Satya Nadella. Yes, Satya. Pardon
okay.
me.
Sorry.
SN, no. Not SP. Sorry. Yes, I apologize. But there wasn't, I mean, did you notice that, Stacey, having been at the Build a keynote yesterday?
There were obviously big overlaps, machine learning at the edge, bringing AI everywhere. And the reason is because all of these companies have to find a way to adapt their business model to a world that doesn't have screens, where you're going to have to basically, you're going to need an operating system that runs in the cloud, on device, yeah. and mediate somewhere in a middle point, yeah. right? A third place. So what is that going to look like? You know, I bet it's Google Kubernetes is kind of the sense here, but how do you adapt your business model to handle this? Microsoft is betting on services that it pulls down from these. Google is betting on Kubernetes and its machine learning to just make better end consumer products. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. They showed, I thought, a very heartwarming segment about a young woman who is a developer, but also it looked like she had cerebral palsy. She had some sort of movement issues using Gboard and an Android phone and Morse code. They've added Morse code to Google's keyboard for Android, Gboard, so she could use her head stick to communicate. And, that was really amazing.
It was really touching. But was the point, Leo, that it could predict the words better? How was the machine learning part of the Morse? Because the Morse code, she could, you know, do every word if you wanted to.
Right.
But it seemed to be that it was predictive of the words, which we'll get to in a minute, about how they're getting better at that. And is that how it worked? I couldn't tell what the ML part was.
Well, that's an interesting point. Yeah, it must have been that there was some prediction.
Yeah, I think it was the autocomplete. The fact right. that they added Morse code understanding was one piece of it to Gboard, but then the autocomplete feature, which is ML-based, and then that led into the Gmail, the new Gmail composition where it completes the sentences for you.
Yeah. Sundar showed it, said he's been sending a lot of emails to Google employees, much to their dismay, about Taco Tuesday and stuff. That was a cool demo. You hit tab. Here's the animated GIF from Engadget's website. You hit tab and it will kind of guess what not just the next word, but the rest of the sentence would say. So you type let's and it would say, do you mean get together soon? and you hit tab and it would type that in. I don't have it yet in my Gmail, so I can't vouch for how accurate it is, but it was, as with all these demos, very impressive on stage.
Is it learning? Would it learn custom to you as well?
I don't know. It seemed to. I'll tell you why I think so, because he typed Taco Tuesdays in the subject, and it did suggest after Let's Get Together, it suggested four tacos. So it's clearly looking at what's going on and adding.
And Stacey, to answer the question of personalization, you can start to type your home address or your phone number.
It filled it out.
It has that information. It literally starts to autofill that for you because it knows it's you.
Yeah.
But I think Stacey's also asking about the kind of grammar you use or other things. I always get freaked in the auto answer that it uses so many exclamation points, and I think I don't use that many exclamation points.
See, it's perfect for me, Jeff.
Yeah. Stacey and I are big on explanation. I find myself looking back at my email saying, I have an exclamation point in every sentence. I really should pick and choose here.
I talked to somebody the other day who said she dated a Yale guy, and he said, you should use only three exclamation points in life, and I've used one.
I agree. However, nowadays in modern communication, you don't have as many ways to show nuance. An exclamation point is one way to say, go up at the end of the sentence, I guess.
So I happen to be sitting next to a brilliant journalist from a Swiss newspaper during the entire keynote. And it was really interesting to see the keynote from a European's eyes, because you see things like that autocomplete. And you and I say, oh, that's cool. It knows what, it's in my brain. It knows what I'm going to say. And the Europeans are saying, "Bruh."
Yeah. It's in my brain. It knows what I'm going to say. So does anybody here have it? I have the new Gmail. I think everybody does, or can if they go to the settings. But I don't.
Once Stacey and I got a lot of Twitter instructions from many people about how to set it up in G Suite, but yes, we do finally.
Yeah, but you don't have the autocomplete yet, right?
Or no,
do
no,
you?
No, no, no. Yeah. No, I don't.
Almost everything they talked about is rolling out in the next few weeks, except for one thing that I know Jeff's going to want to talk a lot about. But we're going to hold off on Google News because I want to do this in chronological order, as if you're watching the keynote live.
Actually, and now you're going to hear in the background they have sound up for the other keynote. So
good.
Great. A lot. But I'll hear what's up.
We should mention that Jeff is in the press tent. That's where he's able to get the best bandwidth. It's fine. I don't mind. He's just muting himself when he doesn't have anything to say. So if it gets noisy,
many people wish I would do this more often. Yes, I know.
We do get it's a nice indicator that you're about ready to talk. So it helps with latency issues.
It does,
that we
doesn't
have.
It? I like that. Mm-hmm. Stacey, on the other hand, is in some sort of weird Microsoft soundproof booth.
It is not soundproof. I'm hoping that you guys they didn't have any real setups for this, so there's every now and then you hear the hand dryer from the bathroom go off because it's one of those big Dyson. It's like,
you know what I like, and I want to make this a trend. Completely parenthetically, I was in Japan on vacation the last couple of weeks. By the way, thank you, for Jason Howell, for filling in for me while I was gone. They don't have paper towels in the men's room, or I presume the women's room, although I didn't check. Right. They do have sometimes blowers, but most of the time, nothing.
Yes.
And the expectation is, well, you have your little handkerchief, your pocket towel.
It's like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You've got to bring your own towel.
Yeah. So I just ordered 14 handkerchiefs online because that's brilliant. I'm not going to use paper towels anymore at all. I think this could change the world, save the world.
Do you believe that the hand dryers, in fact, blow fecal matter onto your
hands?
I don't
think it's a belief. I think it's a fact.
You only dry your hands, though, after you've washed them. So why is there still fecal matter on them?
The fecal matter is in the bathroom, and the dryer is sucking in air and blowing it on your hands.
Oh, my God. You guys, just go live in your bubble. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fun.
This is why I don't use the bathroom outside of the house.
It's Neurotic Weekly.
There was a study. There have been several studies that say it's actually doing that. I don't know if those Dyson blade dryers do that, but certainly the old-fashioned hand dryers, which don't work anyway, that's what those tests were on. But again, your pocket hanky. Bring it with you. I think this is... brilliant. I was really.
I watched a man yesterday who sat next to me blow his nose on his pocket hanky a couple times and then pull off his glasses, stare speculatively at them in a moment. And then I'm like, he's not going to do it. He's not doing it. And then he did it. He wiped his glasses.
Well, there is the clean corner versus the dirty corner.
There is.
I was done.
You can tell the difference.
One for each pocket, clean and dirty.
You knew he was going to do that and you didn't get video?
I did not. I didn't want to keep that. But yeah.
Google Photos has some new, will have in the next few weeks, in the coming weeks, some new features, including one I was really impressed with, a colorize feature where you could take old family photos and turn them into color photos, as well as a feature that will turn a photo black and white except for a certain region. These are, you know, there's third-party tools that will do all these things, but this is built into Photos, which is nice. There's suggested actions, which will kind of say, hey, we could make this better this way. They pitched the sharing feature, which they pitched last year again. I don't know. Maybe it works better now. I don't know. If the picture is too dark, AI will recommend brightening it. If it spots a document, I love this, it will convert it to PDF. And that is really cool. And Lens, I'm jumping a little bit ahead because Lens was a little later, but Lens will also allow you, if you take a picture of text, to copy the text and paste it, even though it's a picture of text.
So I had a question about this because didn't Google last year say they were going to like remove weird stuff from your photos, like fences and trees growing out of people's heads or something like that? They had a
maybe. One of the things they did say and that they have done is if it sees receipts and things that you aren't really photos, you're just keeping track of, it'll offer to archive those, and it does
do that. That does happen, but yeah. It never offered because I was really excited about taking.
I know what you're talking about. Power lines and stuff. Yes, they had a picture. They showed a kid playing baseball in Little League, and there was a fence over it. Wait a minute, what's happening here? Something strange has happened. Jeff's hair seems to have fallen out. Oh no, it's
hey,
hey, Miriam. wait a minute, she's muted.
Muted.
Jeff has to push the button.
There we go.
There you go.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Google I.O.
Nice to see you.
Jeff just said, sit down, put this on. I'm like, okay.
Are you having fun?
Yeah, of course I am. It's pretty awesome. It's kind of like the big playground for developers. This is definitely the most playground-feeling conference if you're a developer ever. So Google knows how to do this right.
Since we've got you, what was your favorite thing they talked about?
I think, honestly, so far, I find the news are a little meh, but I do feel like the Android P features they went through are pretty exciting. And some of the Lens stuff, like being able to select text.
Yeah.
Right.
Wasn't that amazing?
Yeah. And then, Google Maps, like AR and Google Maps, this visual positioning system they talked about, I think is pretty awesome. There's definitely some good stuff here. I kind of felt the Waymo stuff is a little bit overconfident, but most autonomous car stuff is. I mean, I'm a big supporter of it, but at the same time, as a journalist, I have to kind of do due diligence, right? But I think it's been so far good. I.O. There is a developer keynote going on. I'm checking that out right now. And so, Jeff put me on the spot, but here I am. So I'm going to give it back to him, and you guys can
carry
on.
Nice to see you. Tank Girl, Miriam Jouar, host of the Mobile Tech Podcast. Great to have you. Have fun at I.O. Bye-bye. So that takes us a little bit out of chronology, but I'm going to be anal and put us back in the in the chronology. So those are Google Photos features. Then let's see, Taco Tuesday, Google Assistant. Actually, there was a lot of sizzle in this keynote. And as always, some of this sizzle will not emerge or will emerge much later. But there was some interesting stuff with Assistant that I look forward to seeing. 6 new voices, and they said that'll come soon, including a demo of John Legend recording some stuff.
So here's my question. What voices do you want them to do?
Sean Connery.
Hello, Stacey.
Somebody suggested on Twitter, Gilbert Gottfried.
Stacey, it's time to wash your hands.
I want Scarlett Johansson.
Yes, College of Hazard was another good suggestion.
Yep.
So let me see if I can find the Google Assistant commercial. Apparently John Legend and Kevin Durant are getting big money from Google because they were all over. Let me see. Is this Make Google Do It? Is this going to show off the voice? I don't think it is. This is just John and Chrissy just playing with stuff.
That was just their ad at home. Yeah.
So they had John Legend in the studio. He sang Happy Birthday. But he also did some voice stuff. And then Sundar Pichai actually showed that he could have John Legend's voice telling him he had an appointment. So somehow they're taking the voice and modifying the assistant's voice so it sounds like John Legend.
They showed that off. Remember how they could generate, auto-generate?
Right.
We talked about this a couple shows ago, the auto-generation of different voices.
Yep.
So that's really crazy. And I think we even brought this up, how this could be crazy for fake news and creating, you know how people edit right now things like all the speeches of Obama singing songs and they just edit all his voices together. Something like this, you just grab somebody who has a lot of audio footage and you can just, boom, make a Stacey sounding robot if you wanted to.
Yeah, those days are coming, apparently. Yeah.
You know, what I would like to have is different. Like, one thing that struck me about the six voices is they all sounded American and even white. There was no sense of a variety of voices.
Well, I think that's why they showed John Legend, because while he doesn't sound, really urban, he does. I mean, he doesn't sound like a professional voice. Actually, I think I have the video if you want to. Let's see if we can.
Oh, do, yeah.
We can show it here. Am I getting audio from Sundar?
The Google Assistant.
Yeah.
Our vision for the perfect assistant is that it's naturally conversational. It's there when you need it, so that you can get things done in the real world. And we are working to make it even better. We want the assistant to be something that's natural and comfortable to talk to. And to do that, we need to start with the foundation of the Google Assistant, the voice. Today, that's how most users interact with the assistant. Our current voice is codenamed Holly. She was a real person. She spent months in our studio, and then we stitched those recordings together to create voice. But 18 months ago, we announced a breakthrough from our DeepMind team called WaveNet.
I think this is what we were
talking about a couple of weeks ago. WaveNet actually models the underlying raw audio to create a more natural voice. It's closer to how humans speak. The pitch, the pace, even all the pauses that convey meaning. We want to get all of that right. So we've worked hard with WaveNet, and we are adding, as of today, 6 new voices to the Google Assistant. Let's have them say hello.
Good morning, everyone.
I'm your Google Assistant.
Welcome to Shoreline Amphitheater.
We hope you'll enjoy Google I.O.
Back to you, Sundar.
Yeah, they're very kind of white, European, non-accented announcery voices, but that's where this gets more interesting, when you could take real people. So that's, these are generic.
Our goal is to get the right accents, languages, and dialects right globally. You know, WaveNet can make this much easier. With this technology, we started wondering who we could get into the studio with an amazing voice. Take a look.
This is the John Legend.
Couscous, a type of North African semolina in granules made from crushed durum wheat.
So he does not have in any way a kind of a polished voice. I mean, he's obviously a polished singer.
I want a puppy
singer
with sweet eyes and a fluffy tail who likes my haiku.
But he sounds like a normal person.
Happy birthday to the person whose birthday it is. Happy birthday to you. John Legend. He would probably tell you he don't want to brag, but he'll be the best assistant you ever had.
Can you tell me where you live?
You can find me on all kinds of devices. Phones, Google Homes, and if I'm lucky, in your heart.
So that's less impressive than what you're about to hear, which is now that
modified John Legend voice coming out of the assistant. He didn't spend all the time in the studio answering every possible question that you could ask. But WaveNet allowed us to shorten the studio time, and the model can actually capture the richness of his voice. His voice will be coming later this year in certain contexts so that you can get responses like this.
Good morning, Sundar. Right now in Mountain View, it's 65 with clear skies. Today, it's predicted to be 75 degrees and sunny. At 10 a.m., you have an event called Google I.O. Keynote. Then, at 1 p.m., you have margaritas. Have a wonderful day.
That is really natural sounding.
Creepy.
You think it's creepy? It's kind of like real fakes?
I think the potential, the potential for this is pretty disconcerting.
You sound like a Swiss journalist now.
But you'll get, yeah, exactly. But I think you'll get used to the idea that sometimes the voices you know computer voices sound wacky. Computer voices don't have to sound wacky. They can sound human. And once they do, they can sound like different humans. And I think we'll just get used to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's fine as long as we build in kind of as long as we build this with like an adversarial viewpoint on how it could be used. We're already talking about things like voice authentication. There was a thing here last night at Microsoft Build that talked about using voice as an authenticator. Something like this would just destroy that.
Yeah, that's true.
But is Google actually rolling WaveNet out, or are they just using it for their own products and services?
Well, that's an interesting question. Maybe they'll have to keep it to themselves because of, like, face recognition, the danger.
Right.
Well, but a lot of their AI efforts will be, I mean, they're going to generate reports and papers based on this. What in one of the reasons why it probably sounds a bit generic is because their training data is probably like, it's like the BBC English, except it's not. It's generic American English because that's NPR the English. Easiest thing for people to understand.
Well, that's what they're going to play. But I'm sure. I mean, Sundar Pichai could do his,
exactly.
You know, I'm his saying. Voice. Yeah, right. And it could sound here. Let me play. This is the thing that I don't know if this is creepy. But this is very impressive. So this is now another technology that Google announced that is going to allow the assistant to actually place calls on your behalf. Watch this. This one is wild.
...is to help you get things done. It turns out a big part of getting things done is making a phone call. You may want to get an oil change schedule, maybe call a plumber in the middle of the week, or even schedule a haircut appointment. You know, we are working hard to help users through those moments. We want to connect users to businesses in a good way. Businesses actually rely a lot on this, but even in the US, 60% of small businesses don't have an online booking system set up. We think AI can help with this problem. So let's go back to this example. Let's say you want to ask Google to make you a haircut appointment on Tuesday between 10 and noon. What happens is the Google Assistant makes the call seamlessly in the background for you. So what you're going to hear is the Google Assistant actually calling a real salon to schedule the appointment for you. Let's listen.
Now, this is wild. You'll hear, by the way, this sounds like a real assistant. They intentionally have her sticking in ums and pauses. But the thing that's most impressive to me is not that, but how she responds to a real human. And this is like the self-driving car problem. And sometimes humans steer you wrong or say, I mean, and it seemed to do, and of course these are canned demos, but it seemed to do a very good job of handling real world situations. Listen to this. This is the assistant.
How can I help you?
That's a real salon.
Hi, I'm calling to book a woman's haircut for a client. I'm looking for something on May 3rd.
That's the assistant. I'm looking for something on May 3rd. That's a computer.
Sure, give me one second.
This is a human.
She's up talking too.
She is. She's up talking.
Sure. What time are you looking
she
for?
She said,
"Mm-hmm." At 12 p.m. We do not have a 12 p.m. available. The closest we have to that is a 1:15.
Now, how is the assistant going to deal with that one, right?
Do you have anything between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m.? Depending on what service she would like, what service is she looking for? Just a woman's haircut for now? Okay, we have a 10 o'clock. 10 a.m. is fine. Okay, what's her first name? The first name is Lisa. Okay, perfect.
Her first name is Lisa.
I will see Lisa at 10 o'clock on May 3rd. Okay, great. Thanks. Great. Have a great day. Bye.
One of the things that scares me about that is that it's clear they're trying to make it fool The receptionist.
Did you hear it turn around the robocall now?
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine this technology in the wrong hands is terrifying.
I get those all the time, don't you? I mean, I get those where they're trying to fake that they're human.
Yeah.
And you ask them, are you a robot? And they have some canned answer, and they're not. Sorry. Go ahead, Stacey.
No, I was very excited from a business perspective. Google's talking about using this for calling restaurants to see if they're open for holiday hours, for example. And that, if you can imagine the automation of data collection at that kind of scale, that is mind-boggling how quickly Google could gain an edge.
Well, and this is really an example. To me, I'm kind of lately on a kick saying, stop calling it AI. That's a marketing term. Machine learning I can live with, but AI is a marketing term, except that this is AI now. This is actually – here, listen to this one. This is a much more challenging call.
I couldn't have done this phone call. I couldn't have gotten through this.
Maybe it's a small restaurant which is not easily available to book online. The call actually goes a bit differently than expected. So take a listen.
See, how may I help you?
Hi, I'd like to reserve a table for Wednesday the 7th.
For 7 people?
Okay, so the human misunderstood the assistant. He was saying at 7 p.m., she thought he said for 7 people.
Maybe she's a robot. That would be awesome.
She did a worse job of understanding him than she does. He does of understanding, or it does of understanding her. She's actually pretty difficult to understand. Listen to how this continues. So she's already throwing it. I got to say it. It's really tempting to say him, isn't it? It a curve.
It's for 4 people.
4 people when?
Next Wednesday at 6 p.m.
Oh, actually, we reserve for up to 5 people.
Now, if you are not watching the video and didn't see the caption, what the human just said is, we only allow reservations for more than 5 people. For 4 people, you can come.
How long is the wait usually to be seated?
Now, that's actually the right response to that, which is, I don't need a reservation. Well, how long will I have to wait? That's a very sophisticated, I think, response.
When tomorrow or weekday or?
For next Wednesday, the 7th.
Oh, no, it's not too busy. You can count for 4 people, okay?
Oh, I gotcha. Thanks.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Wow.
This is Turing test level.
This is beyond. Yeah, this is very impressive.
I want to note something here for a moment. It's 1 o'clock in Sundar's calendar, and they just started serving margaritas.
They actually serving margaritas?
I shouldn't drink it.
Drink it.
I don't get any beverages until 6 o'clock.
Microsoft does not serve margaritas.
It's good, and it has tequila in it.
There's actual tequila. Oh my God.
Nice. So,
I've never done that early.
When are they announcing this? Because this reminds me, remember Facebook M, but they put the person in the loop for as things got more complicated?
Yeah.
Facebook actually killed that project with the people. They kept the M AI efforts, and they're bringing that back for their smart speaker, it sounds like. But this is, and I've got a lot of questions about, was this, obviously, it's not a live demo. So
they said they had a lot, I don't remember the number, of calls in the can. But my impression is this is an actual project, right? So that means it's something they're working on.
And Google Duplex.
And it's my sense that this is something they're working on. They didn't say coming soon to a phone near you.
But about almost a year ago, I talked on the show about BetaWorks had a voice accelerator and then demo session, and they showed exactly this where it calls off and makes an appointment or buys flowers or whatever. So they, these are companies outside Google working on this. The other interesting thing is, seriously, you also get the opportunity at a really wacky level to have robot to robot in voice,
right?
So rather than having to have voice becomes the API.
But you don't even need voice at that point. If you got robot to robot, they could go.
They could well develop their own. And we've seen that with AI, it does kind of make up its own language.
Right.
They could make up an AI language, but you don't need a you don't need a data communication. You don't need an API. Audio becomes that connection, which is fascinating.
Well, but that's the way we understand it, but it's not the way computers understand it. So really what they'll do is create an analog equivalent to voice that computers can understand. So basically, I know this is esoteric, but I hate when people try to think about humans in or computers in human terms, because
No, it's ridiculously inefficient.
Thank you. It's like, we're not good at the things computers are good at. They're good at things we're not good at.
There's no reason to have a computer translate it into human mode so that it could talk to another computer who has to untranslate it.
It's a computer can call not knowing whether it's going to get a human
right.
or a computer.
That's right.
It can
That's
operate
right.
in either.
That's right.
Right.
More down to earth. Kevin, before I do that, Kevin, you sound like you wanted to say something about this technology.
No, I'm good. I'm kind of watching the keynote and listening along here.
Okay, right? Go right ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Be my guest. They did mention that the Google Assistant will have a feature that Amazon added to its Echo a couple of months ago, the ability to continue on. You trigger it with, hey, Google, but then it would continue on. You liked Stacey's doing a little Stacey dance.
I'm excited about the customized smart routines, even though I spent, hours programming them into the Amazon Echo. But now I can spend hours programming them into the Google Assistant Google Home.
Custom and scheduled routines coming to Assistant. This is very much like the Blueprints feature of Amazon Echo.
No, it's more like the, what do they call it on? It's the same, Robots. You say like a good night command or
watch a movie.
And it does all that. The scheduled aspect of it, I don't believe Amazon has a schedule. So that's actually new.
Okay, good.
That's the missing piece because typically we talk about this on our show, Stacey. You need a hub to kind of create these automations and schedules. And I had said back in March, it's time for Google to make a hub. Well, it looks like they're not doing that. It looks like they're bringing hub features to a voice user interface.
They also
that's smart.
They also had something which I think I have mixed feelings about. Pretty Please.
I like this. Not just for kids, but
I think this too.
I think it encourages civility.
The idea is the assistant can be taught to wait until you ask it politely.
And then it can thank you for doing so.
And then says, thank you for being so polite.
I've heard all kinds of parents say that they see their kids turning into dictators yelling at Siri.
Well, my view on this maybe is that the kid could learn a more nuanced approach, which is that machines do not need to be talked to politely. They're machines. I don't like the idea of mixing the distinction between humans and machines. I think it's important. Encouraging anthropomorphization is not a good thing.
That's a good point.
I will disagree with you just because it is impossible for us not to anthropomorphize things. That is what we're wired to do. And so training people to be polite and civil in their interactions with
it just becomes a habit in general.
You become less abrasive.
I'm okay with that as long as there is also an effort to really help kids understand that this is not a human. There's not a person in there. And that you do treat machines differently than you treat humans.
I don't think that they're in any danger of that. Children recognize machines and people. And I think this isn't actually just for kids, too. I think part of you, like if you just get used to belting out commands at things, you do that as a default.
It
could
become
habitual.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that, yeah.
Even before this rolled out, the Echo has a way now where it will listen for an extra 5 seconds and you can say thank you and she will say you're welcome and so on. And I've been using that feature. I mean, I was saying thank you a year ago on that thing. So, I think it depends on the person and kids, that's a tough one. I mean, I know lots of little kids, how do they get the people on the TV? And they don't realize that, it is a device sometimes. So.
And I it's always nice because sometimes I say thank you to people regardless. Like I say thank you to my washing machine, not because I feel like it's doing anything. It's just a habit.
Wait. That's a bit much.
We learned something there.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Stacey,
I got to know. What's the conversation you have with your June oven?
Oh, we have long, lots deep, philosophical
Well, there's no voice interaction in the June oven, so it's just...
And you know what? My most common phrase actually to all of my devices, you are disappointing me. I'm very disappointed right now.
She's so polite. I say, F you, Siri, is what I literally say about 3 times a day.
Kevin, is there anything? I see it, but I can't. If they talk about anything interesting that you can tell them in topics?
It's all Android so far. So I haven't.
I'm not listening.
I'm only watching. So.
By the way, thanks to the chat room, have found the Google AI blog post, which just went up on the Google Duplex system. And it has some more examples and talks about how it works. And they're saying this is using something called a recurrent neural network designed to cope with challenging environments using extended TensorFlow or TensorFlow extended TFX. And let me just play a couple more of these clips that will give you an idea of this is Duplex handling interruptions.
Okay, what's your phone number?
The phone number is 607.
Wait, can you start over?
The number is 607.
Uh-huh.
It's a little robotic.
223.
But
22 what?
223.
Wow, that's impressive.
Okay, 223.
These are real conversations. Let me give you another one. This is
Hi, I would like to reserve a table for May 25th.
Sorry, what day?
For Friday, May 25th.
It added Friday to help the human. Here's Duplex responding to a sync.
Are you here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you here? Yeah, I'm here.
So imagine how this could be used in all kinds of other ways, in not just making appointments at first, but turning journalism into voice and asking questions, in being able to call brands and stores and get help. The opportunities are just endless.
Here's a new
you
word.
Have your AI negotiate on your behalf for like insurance companies.
Here's a new word.
Amen.
Here's a new word that you like for you writers: disfluencies. The uhs and ums that they add, they call those speech disfluencies. They're added when combining widely differing sound units in the concatenative TTS or adding synthetic weights, which allows the system to signal in a natural way that it is still processing. In other words, when you hear those ums, it's actually thinking.
Oh, it's the spinning wheel.
It's doing what humans do when you hear an um.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I see the future very close when a parent says to a child saying all the time, you sound like a robot.
It's better than working.
Oh, someone in the chat room did this. But this is true. Sales pitches to old pensioners from Toad Slot.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of scammers using this
It's going to be terrible.
Oh, yeah. God.
It's going to be terrible.
What's that Jolly Roger site, I think it is, where you can turn it on to...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A robocaller.
We've had him on a couple of times. He's great. Yeah. And here's another. This is another, again, from this blog post. It's important for latency to match people's expectations. For example, after people say something simple, for example, hello, they expect an instant response and are more sensitive to latency. When we detect that low latency is required, we use faster, low confidence models. In other words, they'd like to be more precise in their responses, but they can sense that the human is impatient, so they'll give them something that may be a little wrong, but at least it's something. This is just wild.
That's actually how I talk to people.
Yeah.
If you look really impatient, I'm like, popsicles.
See, this is AI.
You got it.
This is AI. This is real AI.
No, it's making a computer look human is what it is. It's
okay.
All right.
It's not really thinking. You're right. It's not really thinking.
Leo, since you do radio, years ago when I used to be on Ron Owen's show, Ron would let a call go on, and he'd start talking to me, and I'd think, what the hell? He started talking to me? And I think, what the hell are you doing? Then halfway through the call, he would just put his hand up, hit the button, and say, why do you say that?
Oh! He was just showing off. He was just showing off, Jeff. I have to say, though, John C. Dvorak tells the story of being on the Larry King show. And Larry actually falling asleep, because remember, it used to be an all-night, late-night show, falling asleep during a call. John didn't know what to do, so he answered, and he kind of extended the answer, hoping Larry would wake up. Finally, he just ran out of things to say, so he stopped, and King goes, Minneapolis, next. So
that is awesome.
And so humans have all sorts of tricks for handling these kinds of things. I'm really impressed by this Google Duplex. I'm not sure how it's going to get used. obviously. It says this summer we'll start testing the duplex technology within Google Assistant. This summer, to help users make reservations for restaurants, to schedule hair salon appointments, and get holiday hours over the phone. They feel apparently confident enough. There's a picture of Yaniv Leviathan, Google Duplex lead, and Matan Kalman, engineering manager, enjoying a meal booked through a call from Duplex. Here's the call. They're actually...
Hey, I'm calling to make a reservation.
Hey.
I'm looking for a table on Friday the 4th.
This Friday?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So, how many people? Five?
It's for two people.
For two?
Yes.
And what time you will come?
At 7 p.m.
7? And my full name?
First name is Yaniv. Y-A-N-I-V.
Okay, I got it. So, it will be two people at 7 o'clock?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, got it. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, awesome.
He sounded
kind of
like a jerk there.
Thank you. Have a good
night. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a little robotic jerk. Like a Google bro. Maybe that's exactly how Yaniv sounds. I don't know.
So listening to these calls, which apparently are made to mostly like four ethnic restaurants, well, I guess.
Those are challenging. Those are.
They are. Well, they're challenging if you're trained on certain accents and data. So that's, it kind of emphasizes this weird class divide. It's actually uncomfortable listening to a bunch of those in a row.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, because it's this white.
Yeah, that's really true, Stacey.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're showing Linux on the Chromebooks in the developer conference.
Oh, how exciting. Crostini. Wait, crouton crostini is the next one. Bruschetta?
Bruschetta?
Bruschetta. CH is a K in Italian.
Oh.
So as impressive as all this is, I mean, to me, it's almost like...
By the way, that's exactly how bros talk to people. At work at restaurants. I think you mean bruschetta. Go ahead, Kevin. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm just trying to get Stacey to spit that Perrier out through her nose.
Not happening.
It almost feels like a next generation chatbot in a sense, only you're not doing the chatting at this point.
Well, somebody in the chat room said, and I think this is accurate, it sounds depressed. The bot doesn't sound, it sounds like it's something wrong with it. Like this is, and this is the, this is where Uncanny Valley happens in audio as well as in visual elements, right? Where we're so well attuned to detecting, you know, emotions and feelings in other people that I think when we hear these voices, we say, boy, you sound like you're covering up depression. Is what it sounds like to me.
Or it's trying to offer up its own emotions and not react to yours. I get that.
Yeah.
So it makes me wonder, what would it like to redo Eliza today?
Wow, you're sounding depressed, Jeff. Are you wondering what it would be like to redo Eliza today?
Why do you say that?
I say that because you said this.
Guys, we might be building Marvin.
Marvin, the paranoid android. I have this pain all up and down the diodes on my back.
Well, the next part of all this that really freaked my European neighbor was
Sorry. No, go ahead, Jeff.
No, I stepped on your punchline.
A brain the size of a planet.
So who else is Google competing with here? Is anybody else close?
No one's even close. Amazon.
I would agree.
Amazon's the next closest, right? And they've been winning because of Amazon's ubiquity, because people like to shop. That seems to be a good, useful tool on this stuff. But ultimately, if Google can make this stuff real, it's all over. Well, and frankly, one of the problems I have with a lot of voice assistants is I use the Echoes in the homes because they're ambient. I don't know about you guys. Do you use voice assistants on your phones?
I do not.
I hate driving. Yeah.
Driving, maybe. Okay. That's a specific use case,
no,
I guess.
I even do it when I'm sitting around. If I'm sitting around with people, and they say, well, what time does that movie start? I'll say it. They all hate me for doing it because it looks obnoxious, but I'll do it. Okay, Google.
Yeah, I do it sometimes like that, but I don't use it an awful lot, and I think these kinds of things might make you use it more.
You got to think of it. You got to remember you can do it.
What are they? Is they saying anything interesting about Crostini, Kevin?
No, they've zipped around. They went through PWAs quickly, talked about uptake on that, how to get more people using them, AMP, and then, yeah, it looks like they're just showing Android UI stuff right now.
Wow,
so.
They moved on fast. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, wait, I want to go back to this Duplex thing and other companies, not in voice, but in... Actually, no, in voice, and then translating voice into an action item or service. Microsoft actually yesterday ran a really cool demo. I don't know if they talked about the future of work demo that they did.
Oh, the Teams demo. Yeah, wasn't that amazing? Yeah.
So they showed off, basically they had this cone, I don't really know what all's in there, with a camera and some voice stuff. So when you came into a meeting, it was transcribing your meeting as people talked, and it knew who the people were based on, like, I don't know, their face and their employee ID badge. I'm not sure which one. But then it pulled out things that it thought were action items. So when you say words like, oh, I'll follow up on this, or I'll send you an email, it actually pulled that into notes that you could, like, then pull into your Outlook or whatever. But I actually thought that was a really good way of augmenting human intelligence and to, like, spare you, what is it, just a crappy robotic task, you know?
Yeah.
So I know it's not like an interaction with a real human at a restaurant, but another question is, how long are you going to have humans answering the phone as opposed to computers querying each other? And
To be fair, I know Sundar said only 60% of, 60% of, what is it, businesses don't have online booking. But most of the restaurants I go to, my hair salon, most of the places I go are online booking, so I never interact with a human. I don't want to interact with a human. It's much easier to do it online.
I hate doing online booking because you're and maybe it's because, you know, I'm like, oh, is it going to be a haircut? Is it going to be the dye for the blue? Is it going to be a bleach? There's a lot of information that has to happen, and then I can't ever remember my passwords. It's just drama, and I have to remember to do it. So like when I remember something right away and say, oh, hey, Google, just make me an appointment for redyeing my hair. That would be super awesome if it just went and did it. But that's kind of a lot of things to join. I know. Hopefully we'll get there.
You have different needs than I do, apparently.
I do.
So have we gotten to continuous communication yet? Continuous conversation?
I touched on it briefly, just the idea that Amazon did this a few months ago where you trigger it once and then you can have an ongoing conversation.
Yeah. I was just going to say that's what freaked my European neighbor more than anything. You know, it's listening to you constantly. And I said, you opt in. It's listening to you constantly.
No, it doesn't listen to you until you say the trigger word, and then it says, right.
When does it know to shut off? When do you know it shuts off?
Well, that's a good question. I guess it's waiting for a pause. I don't know.
It's supposed to be seven. In a normal thing, it's 7 seconds after you're done.
Okay. And there's a total limit as well, right?
I don't know if there's a total limit.
I think there's a total limit.
So it'd be interesting. So Howard Stern this week had a radio derby, and he tried to get to see how long you could keep a call going to a restaurant or something. It was exactly what was to your point, Stacey, about a class thing here. How you could keep going by never answering somebody's question. You could imagine doing derbies with this stuff and seeing how long you can keep.
Oh, the hands of trolls, this stuff is a nightmare.
Oh, it'd be amazing.
Well,
40 phone calls brought to life.
And that's why we need this. I feel like it was a Wired story or Ours story, that this adversarial model for building this stuff and testing it, recognizing that humans, when we program them, we program them to behave one way and expect them to behave one way. But when you start interacting more closely with people, people are going to do just mean, awful things to them. And on the programming side, we actually have to start thinking about that and building for that.
I'm more worried about the robots moving, doing mean, awful things to the humans.
Yes, that's one way we could go. But I really think it's important as we put our faith in this stuff. So think about things like people are talking about putting like little tiny pixels on stop signs just to screw with self-driving cars. Those are the kind of things people will consider and think of. And we need the people building this stuff to think of that too.
So it goes both ways. And of course, that's the other side of that is the ethics conversation that I think Satya Nadella spent much more time on, and appropriately so, yesterday. But and Sundar's touched on a little bit, but I think that all programmers now have to for so many years, and you're programming, Kevin, you know this, your whole mindset was just let me get the machine to do this thing. Now they really have to think about how will it be used and how will it be abused. Both of those things are now very, very important, and we're missing and have been missing in the past.
Right. Design and user experience, user interface are all obviously things that you have to consider, but it's not just the people that are going to use your service, your app, your device. It's what are the other people around it who aren't going to use it? What might they do, and how do you mitigate for things you don't even know?
Well, and abuse it with like hit your LiDAR with a baseball bat, hit your $11,000 LiDAR with a baseball bat. So, yeah, it's unfortunate, but I think it's actually a maturation process in coding that you have to start thinking about human factors much more.
Stacey, back to your point, now you have the ethic and in some cases law that if you're being recorded, you have to hear a beep. Right?
Yeah.
I wonder if a robot's speaking, do they have to start with a beep?
They should. I think it would be appropriate, don't you, that the robots say, I am an assistant, an automated assistant calling on behalf of Leo Laporte before it does that?
That would make sense, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's something that good people will do and other people won't.
Right.
But yeah, I agree. There's probably the polite thing to, just like the polite thing to do, even if in like a two-party consent state, I have to say that I'm recording. Right. But I'm recording from Texas, which is not. So I could just record the phone call.
But it's appropriate to do
because
so.
I'm not a jerk.
Yeah.
I say, I'm recording this. Is it okay?
Hello.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I am an automated assistant calling for Leo Laporte.
So then the hair salon, when they get upset, they say, take me to your master.
Oh, can I speak to a supervisor? Can I speak to your owner?
What about when this becomes commonplace, though? Let's think 5-10 years down the road, assuming it does. I mean, right now it makes sense. Yes, I agree. The bot, the AI should identify itself because it's a new thing and people have to get used to this. But what if it becomes widespread? Will we not want to know that? Will we care? I don't know.
Well, there's some really cool things like, what if you got a robot therapist in the future, right? Like an AI-based therapist, that in a way could open up a lot of opportunities for people who can't afford a like $150 or $200 therapy session, right? You could buy a robot one for $25 and see if it works for you. So I think you should have
that really.
It's not crazy.
Yeah, but it really kind of diminishes the importance of the skill of a therapist. Because
it's just to listen.
I mean, you're just here to listen. Shut up, and I'm going to tell you my dreams.
Well, no, I mean there are definitely questions it could ask to help you.
I guess so.
Anyway, the point is, I think you will have to have a truth in labeling kind of when you're dealing with an AI
at
all
times.
Very
interesting. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I agree with you. I think that absolutely. Let's take a little break. Lots more to talk about. Stacey Higginbotham is here. Well, she's actually in Seattle where she's covering Microsoft's developer conference Build for Stacey on IoT.com. It's nice to have you. Thank you for taking time out from your day to do this. I appreciate it. Also here, Kevin Toefel, Stacey's partner in arms in the IoT podcast. He also has his own site about Chromebooks.com, a new site dedicated to our favorite computers, the Chromebooks. And he's at Google I.O., Mr. Jeff Jarvis, in the press tent, BuzzMachine.com, professor of journalism. And actually, our next segment is going to be all about you, Jeff, because I actually have been playing with the new Google News, and I'm very excited about it. So we'll talk about that in just a second. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. If the time has come to buy a new house or refinance your own home, you ought to think about Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, the best lender in the country by far, number one in customer satisfaction 8 years in a row, thanks to the good folks at J.D. Power and all the people who voted for them. But it's much more than just that. Rocket Mortgage is a completely online loan approval process. How about that? Forget. Now, this is good. You don't need your bot to call the bank. That would be nice to have a bot call the bank and say, I would like a home loan. Instead, you don't even have to do the bank. Forget the bank thing. Just go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. You answer a few questions, simple things you know the answer to, and then it takes it over and does the rest. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information at the touch of a button so you don't have to go through boxes of paperwork. In fact, all of this happens so fast, you could do it at an open house. You could be at an open house, say, I want to buy this house, fire up rocketmortgage.com/twig, and within a few minutes, it's under 10 minutes, you would have a home loan. Based on income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage will analyze all the home loan options for which you qualify, find the one that's just right for you. You specify the term, the rate, the down payment. You get the loan in minutes. No paperwork. No paper. Well, I guess when you get the loan, you have to sign the papers. But actually, they even make that easy. A notary comes to you with all the paperwork, comes to your house, and you don't even have to leave the house. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently at rocketmortgage.com/twig. They're an equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. rocketmortgage.com/twig. We thank them for their support of This Week in Google. I realize I have some disfluencies myself, but we've actually built those into the LeoBot 9000 so that I sound more human. It's working. I fool all.
I think you should get them to train a LeoBot and have it do a show.
Oh, I would. By the way, huge business opportunity. I think by the time I retire, because I'm not going to retire for another 8 to 10 years, right? By the time I retire, I think this show could be hosted by Google Duplex.
If anybody's going to do it, if anybody's going to the first show hosted by a robot,
I want to do this.
Better be Twit.
Yeah.
Yeah, bring it on. They can fact check us. They actually would replace me because they would fact check me. They'd outperform me in fact checking.
I'm sorry, Stacey. I've already looked that up.
Actually, Leo.
And it's pronounced.
This is how it works.
Bro Sketta.
Let's now imagine the Stacey bot, the Leo bot, the Jeff bot on the regular show.
Yeah, we could all just go home. Collect the residuals.
Technology being okay and techno panic, and Stacey will scold me, and Leo will play devil's advocate.
Yeah.
And
we're done. Easy. It's easy. Easy peasy. Let's see. Let's talk about this news. By the way, they did announce, as they did last year, that the public beta for Android P is now available. I immediately installed it on my Pixel 2 XL. And I'm liking it. There's some nice new features. You probably have heard all about them, though, already from Jason Howell and the All About Android crew, and I'm sure they'll talk more about that tonight. Jason actually is going to do All About Android. I believe he's doing it from Google I.O. Am I right?
Yes.
And
he's going to He's going to interview two top Android people tomorrow morning at 10.
Yeah, Google loves All About Android, and they're giving him access to some big shots, executives and so forth. So that will be, I'll leave that Android P discussion to All About Android. But I have to say, I'm liking it quite a bit already. And one of the newest features that I put a widget already, Google has replaced the Google Play Newsstand app with something simply called Google News. Which is confusing because they do have Google News and weather. I'm guessing that has been deprecated. But Google News still has the Google Newsstand subscriptions as a tab on it. But I'm very impressed.
I can't figure out where to get to it. Is it?
If you have Newsstand installed, it'll update. That's all I did. If you don't have Newsstand installed, you probably have to just go to the Android App Store and download Google News.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
So I'll show you. It's hard to see, I know, but front page, first thing that shows up is Leo's briefing, top five stories right now, and they implied that those were algorithmically chosen based on my interests. In my case, the big story is the big story of the day, the Iran nuclear deal. Then there's another Trump story, Kellyanne Conway. The investigators back at rural Petaluma home for death investigation. That's obviously something I'm interested in. That's a local story. Here's a New York Post story. I probably would not use that as a source in future. I'm sure there's a way to turn that off. And 9 to 5 Mac, so it knows I like technology. And then below that, there are additional stories, and those you can categorize in the favorites section. You can choose the topics you're interested in, the sources you're interested in, it has my location, so that's why it knew about the Petaluma story. And then magazines that I can or should subscribe to. This is kind of, Apple's going to do this. They bought Texture, so Apple's obviously going to have something like that in the Apple News. So there's the For You. One thing I think is really important in all of the stories is there's a button, it's a little one on here, that gives you full, what Google called full coverage. And in that case, it's not algorithmically chosen. They were very careful to say, this is all the reporting from all the best sources. I don't know how they choose those on that particular topic. They do include tweets. Now, somebody was saying, and we weren't sure, is it people you follow on Twitter? I don't follow the president, so it isn't just people I follow on Twitter.
Leo, I'm not sure that they didn't say this wasn't algorithmically done. They said that you'd get this, everybody would get the same thing.
That's what they meant. That's what I meant. Yes, right. It, of course, it's algorithmically done, but it's not in the sense that it's tailored to my interests. Everybody gets the same thing.
Well, when you get to that story, everybody gets right. the same full coverage of that story.
Right.
And note well that they're talking about quality. They're talking about the most trusted sources. We have both Facebook and Google working on that now.
So latest updates now in the full coverage page, latest updates, top coverage. It's got social stuff. It's got video, probably not all from YouTube, by the way. There's CNN. There's CNBC. There's the CBS Evening News. A fact check section. I think that's telling. An opinion section, which is interesting, and then analysis and frequently asked questions. This is, I think, really nicely done. This is better than Twitter moments. This is, look how long this is, all on that one story. It almost feels like an infinite scroll. I think it might be on that one story for full coverage. So I think this is, I've only played with it a little bit. There's headlines, and then the headlines, you can look at latest U.S., world, business, technology, entertainment, so forth. Favorites, as I said, was where you customize. They have kept the subscription feature, the newsstand feature, but it's just a tab. And I think, and I'll defer to you in a moment, Jeff, but I think that this is exactly the kind of thing publications with paywalls want, because it's very, and they mentioned this on the stage, very easy to, I want to subscribe to Los Angeles Times. It's a one button push and you're in using your Google Play. And then there's a lot of free stuff as well. There's a subscription sale here. So this is the old newsstand, but I think nicely done mixing, both free and paywall content in together. Vanity Fair, $1.99 a month. If I wanted to subscribe to that, I push a button.
Could Google take that same infrastructure and do it for a per article basis? Because that would be really interesting. That,
right? Just micropayments, you know?
That's, everybody's thought micropayments are going to go over the world, but they don't. I don't think the consumer demand is there for that. I don't think the business demand is there for that. Could they? Yeah, they could. But by adding a drag, by adding a step in, and no matter if it's a nickel or whatever it is, the cost of closing the transaction is much higher than the value of the transaction.
That's
itself.
The problem with microtransactions right now. You got to get
If I saw, if I clicked on an article and it was something that I could only get there, I clicked through and Google threw up a thing saying, hey, it's going to cost you a quarter. They've already got my credit card. If I just hit yes, it'll run through my credit card on my Google Pay or whatever the hell I've got. That would not be super frictiony.
They could do what Apple does. They could bundle it.
Yeah, right. Apple does this with iTunes. You take all of the payments and you do them all at once to reduce the total cost.
The other issue is that if you're going to work on, if you're going to have a $400 subscription to the Wall Street Journal, and I can get by at the five times I care to in a quarter for, 25 cents each, then the publisher is unlikely to want to offer up their stuff in that way.
Right.
It's always been the kind of one of the many messiah we keep waiting for, but it's not quite there.
Apple probably wants to do with Apple News, didn't do. By the way, the widget is great. Every time I go to the widget, it's a slideshow. It says Leo's briefing. It's got a brief weather and a headline. But every time I go to the slideshow, it has a new slide. So they're just kind of updating that, which I think is really nicely done. I have to say I'm very, very impressed. And in fact, immediately put it on a widget on my homepage because I think it's the kind of thing I will probably use as a main news source. So, Jeff, you haven't seen it yet, so you probably don't have the ability to review it, but unmute.
Thank you. Sorry. No, I have it. I have it now. I don't even know how to get a widget anymore. I haven't done it in so long.
You press and long press.
Yeah, okay.
And then
no, I think it's very nice. One thing I don't wonder, I wonder is, just the first off, is why didn't they replace the swipe right on from the Android Home with that?
Yeah, because swipe right still gives you Google Now cards, which are clearly getting deprecated.
And are basically news stuff and not very good news.
Yeah.
It's okay. I go through it, you know, once a day, but
yeah. No, I agree with you. I'm hoping they'll do that.
You have news.google.com, which is different from Google News Playstand, which is different from Now Cards News. So there's a need for some consolidation here. But having complained about that.
Nothing new with Google, right? How many messaging apps do they have?
Exactly. But I think it is very nice. I think that they're trying to – what I want to know, what I'll be I'm going to talk to some of them tomorrow, is how they're making their decisions about quality. I've talked before in the show about the flight to quality that's occurring. Google says Google News, you know, lets basically any site in. Now, how does something rise up in this? There's a quality factor in there. What does that quality factor look like? I'm glad it's there. It'll be controversial in some cases. Same thing going on with Facebook. So we'll see where this goes. But I think it's I can't really know until I use it for day after day after day. But it looks very nice, and I think that the ideas behind it are good.
Yeah, I think Google's right on. Google mentioned that they have now this new initiative. Tell us about this initiative. They're putting, what was it, several million dollars into it? Kind of like the Facebook News initiative, or different?
They're different. Google is investing, not giving away, but investing $300 million in the Google News initiative. After Europe went after them, the Germans went after them with the Leistungsschutzrecht. And Google did create a fund of 150 million euro that they gave away to news innovators for certain projects. They're about to get to the last of giving away the last euros of that. And they also have Google Newsgeist brought to Europe. And then this week I'm going to Newsgeist LAM, and they have the Google News Lab around the world. So Google did a lot of things around news. And the European initiative was so successful, they've now made it global. And in every way that we wanted in news, except that they're not giving away money to news organizations, but I also think that that's kind of foolish to wish for. They are investing a lot of money. They care about it. This is the first time that Google News was on the stage at I.O. This is a big deal for Richard Gingras and company. And part of their initiative is also to help business models of news. The way they're doing it at first, which is the way they have the highest pressure from especially German publishers, is around subscriptions. So they announced a few weeks ago, I talked about it briefly on the show, that they've now made it extremely easy to subscribe. Using your Google ID, using your Google payment, you come across a challenge, you've seen five articles, do you want to subscribe? Yes, I do. One click, your sign-in is the same, your payment is done, and you're there. Then further, when you do a search on a topic, you will get the carousel of the most important things on top, but below that you'll get a carousel of your news sources, and that includes the sources or that is made up of the sources that you subscribe to. Now, my fetching about that is I also want them to do this around a model of membership and contribution, and when it comes to my sources, I should be able to put in sources there that are free, that I like, not just things I pay for. But those things can be done and can be done easily, and they nod their heads at that. I think this is a good thing for news. They're making friends with news. It's also their way to poke the eyes of Facebook a little bit to say, you know, look how friendly we can be. And the fact that it came from the stage and from Sundar personally endorsing news. He has met with many, many news executives in the industry over the last 2 years, and I think they're proving that they mean what they say.
Good. One of the things that everybody's talking about these days, Apple, in fact, got challenged by its shareholders. A couple of activist shareholders a few months ago told Apple, you need to do something about the addictiveness of your iPhone. So Apple, Google, and yesterday Microsoft are all looking at ways to get people to use their products less, or at least more healthfully. Google calls it digital well-being, and this will be a feature also of Android P.
Now, you want to talk about creepy. This stuff creeped me out. I don't want anybody nannying me and telling me what I can.
Well, you don't have to turn it on.
You have to opt into it. I think it's great. You can mandatorily make it for your kids, right?
Yes.
I think that'll train them into good habits. And if you're the type of person who knows that, I mean, if you know that if you get on your phone after 10, you're going to sit there and scroll through and do worthless crap on it, then you can set this up and it'll help you.
There's a dashboard that is kind of, I already use something called Instant that does the same thing as Dashboard does. It shows you how long you've used the phone, what apps you use the most, and how long you've used them, that kind of thing. But there's also a very odd thing. I think this is what you were talking about, Stacey, that you tell it that you go to bed at 10, for instance, and it will kind of shut down at 10, turn off all notifications, and go and fade to monochrome, fade to black and white, making it less attractive. I thought that was kind of cool.
I love this because I spend, you're already like, you're sacked out on the couch or something. And you're like, I really should get off my phone. I don't need to watch, you know, the latest celebrity fight. But you're still there scrolling.
Yep.
Okay, here's the analog. Imagine that the Samsung Motorola back in the day, Zenith sold you a TV that said, after you've watched so many hours, the TV won't go back on and you can't turn it on. America would have revolted.
But they would offer that as an option. And you're talking, okay, Jeff, to someone who actually programmed a smart plug to turn off, plug the TV into a smart plug. So if I didn't take 10,000 steps a day, the TV wouldn't work.
Oh, good for you.
Oh, that's
now, how long before you turned that back on?
Yeah, it lasted like a day or two.
Yeah, okay. I just want to point out.
What is this drama?
It's a good idea. We do have, though. No, we use our router. The Eero turns off at 10 p.m., not for us, but for Michael, because kids will stay up all night. And so there's no internet after 10 p.m. I think these are all appropriate. Google calls that feature wind down, by the way. I was trying to remember the name.
It's the equivalent of pre-prepping vegetables, sticking them in your fridge when you're on a diet. That is what this is.
We do that. I have carrot sticks and celery sticks in my fridge.
No, my mother looks at me and says, Jeff, you've been on that YouTube a very long time today.
You don't have to do it. YouTube will also have that, by the way. Yes, YouTube will have the how long you've watched feature.
Oh. And I don't. And the dashboard telling what I've done all day. I don't want to know.
You don't have
to, Kevin.
You don't have to. This is why, like.
It's good for you, Jeff. Just eat your spinach.
All this data was already there, Jeff. It's the telemetry. It's been on there. It's on Windows machines. It's all that information. They're just making it useful if you want to use it. If you don't want to, not a problem.
Sundar Pichai coined a new acronym. Instead of FOMO, fear of missing out, he calls it JOMO, the joy of missing out, Jeff. You need to get JOMO'd.
You need more joy.
More joy. Miriam Joire, when she was on.
And don't you tell me to have more joy. I don't want any of your damn joy.
No. I see you're the vitamin D from Shoreline is not.
No, not enough sunshine. He's not even still pale as a ghost. One of the things Miriam Joire said she liked was the new maps feature. I really like this.
This was a show winner, was the walking.
Really?
Oh, every time a New Yorker, every time I get out and I try to figure out the blue thing, where am I going? Am I going this way or am I going that way? This is the thing I applauded. This is the show winner. Is visual? Here's where you are. Go this way.
I agree. 100%.
Follow the little box.
It's,
I love that.
It's really. I guess if you drive, you're giving it enough direction information that that's not an issue. It's when you're walking, I invariably go the wrong way down the street.
Yeah.
You'll see me if you see me around town. I'm always going like this. This is the figure eight gesture you do to supposedly calibrates the compass. And then I go like this. Which way am I going? So what they're doing with Google Maps, I think, is great. They're going to use augmented reality. They're going to actually turn on the camera when you're looking at the maps and you're walking around. Show the street. Show where you're looking. I got to hear a car. You got it. There you go. And superimpose the map on top of that, so it's very clear that it's time to turn right.
And they're playing with the idea you could even follow a nice little animal.
They had a fox. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mind that. I like that. I will turn on the fox if they turn that on. I think that's nice. Lens.
Oh, I was excited about the fox.
Yeah.
Kids will love that.
Yeah, anybody would. I think this is an, anyway, this will be a
and
this
it's
will
also
be a, nice
a wonderful place to do merchandising tie-in. Imagine following BB-8 yes. around.
Yep.
Or whomever.
Yep. Or and they once again they showed this last year and they didn't never it never really came out the idea that as you're looking on this augmented reality signs pop up, you know, you see the street and signs pop up where businesses are. They didn't implement it. They showed it again. Maybe they'll implement it this year. That's all kind of part of Lens. In fact, Lens will now, if you show it an outfit, you can tap parts of the outfit and say, well, how do I get that bag or bags like it?
Those features, I've never been pleased with those features. I've seen a lot of them.
Yeah.
They remain. I'll test it and see if it's any good.
It's like image search, but it's built in, right?
Most of them suck.
Yeah, I agree. I do love, you know, again, remember how last year they demoed the instantaneous translation using Pixel Buds? And then when we got the Pixel Buds, it was nothing like the demo.
Yeah, this is what I was worried about with Duplex.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Always got to remember, demos are a different animal. Although this Google Lens demo where you could take a picture, she's aiming her camera at a recipe book, using Lens to, not even taking a picture, show the text and then copying and pasting it.
Why don't you just send the picture to someone? I send people recipes this way all the time.
I do too, but then you can paste it into something. I don't know.
I'd love to do this for researching, pulling quotes out of books.
Sure.
And things. That'd be great.
Sure. Again, we'll wait and see how well, that works.
Yeah.
You can point your picture at a poster of a musician or an ad and get his music automatically. This is like just image search built in mobile and doing a lot more. They wrapped up talking about self-driving cars and Waymo, and they're claiming a 100 times reduction in error rate using deep learning. They didn't mention the fact that there was a Waymo accident in Arizona just last week. Although I wasn't around for it, but I understand it wasn't the car's fault that it was hit by something, right? And so,
I think something veered over and hit it.
Right. They showed a picture of people in inflatable dinosaur suits, and how the car knew that was people, or something. Not, I guess, something you shouldn't hit. Maybe that.
However, if it can recognize a mime and hit that, that's fine.
Yeah, if it's a mime, hit it. Right. It showed. Oh, I thought this was good. How it can handle inclement weather. They showed a snowy street, and this is all the noise caused by the snow, which makes it very difficult to drive. But they showed how machine learning can strip the noise out and actually give you a clearer view than you have as a human. I think that's exciting. I think that's very cool. So some Waymo, they're moving along. They acted as if it's just around the corner that you're going to be able to get a Waymo. You don't think so, Kevin?
I don't think so. They did say that in Phoenix, where they've been doing the trials, they're going to have, by the end of the year, I believe, a transportation center for this. But that's one very large area, yes, but just one area. This is going to take a long time to roll out. There's still a lot of laws to deal with amongst different states. So this is baby steps.
Yeah. So that, in a nutshell, is Google I.O. Of course, it continues on. Right now, they're doing the developer talk. Anything more to be said there? I remember how excited everybody was last year when they said the word Kotlin.
Oh, yeah. People are still excited about Kotlin.
Yeah, that's a...
They have a sold-out session on Kotlin.
Kotlin.
Yep.
It's a programming language that you can write Android apps in.
It's interesting how they're changing all of the applications that to support creating apps for their platform. They've got Flutter, they've got Kotlin, they've got Dart, they still use Go. I don't know if this all still has to do with Oracle and Java or what the deal is, but
started that way, but I think it's also an occupational hazard amongst engineers, computer scientists. They just love new languages, and everybody's got to write
one language.
Right,
right.
You struggle with five.
Yeah,
exactly. They're always be writing new languages. That's why I'm a Lisp fan. It's a language that you can write languages in. Perfect. You basically write a application-specific language for every program you write. Anything else anybody wants to say? Anything going on?
One little bit of news.
Yes.
I just saw that Facebook, David Marcus, is leaving Messenger to head a new team dedicated to blockchain. What that means, I have no idea.
Oh,
but every meatloaf has to have a blockchain gravy.
Oh, Lord. And what, of course, WhatsApp's founders are moving on. I wonder what that all means. Facebook is making its biggest executive shuffle in company history, according to Kurt Wagner at Recode. Wow. WhatsApp, Messenger, and Facebook's core apps are getting new leaders as part of a massive executive shakeup. Reorg. We'll have more on that, I'm sure, next week. Anybody, anything? Anybody? Anybody? Blockchain? Anybody? On Billions on Sunday night.
I had a margarita, so I'm all mellow now.
On Billions Sunday night, they gave a guy a USB key. Said there's $1 million in cryptocurrency on here. A stick, they call it.
And like you, he didn't remember the password.
Yeah. I have to say, I see stuff like that and I go, are you going to give him the password? Are you going to give him the password? Are you going to give him the... Just give him the stick. Give him the password. Westworld, we like it. I haven't seen it yet. Should I?
Not seen it.
Nope.
I don't watch like current shows.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking? Now that I'm like two or three episodes behind because we were out of the country, maybe if I could just force myself, I have to do that Switch thing you did. That until the series is over, I can't start watching it.
I'm catching up on Silicon Valley now, which is just stellar this season.
Is it?
Genius.
Okay, good. Because it went through a dip.
I think it's amazing this season. Just amazing.
All right, good.
I stopped watching. You know what? The dystopia of Handmaid's Tale was
Handmaid's
too much
Tale?
For me.
I couldn't watch it.
Too much.
Yeah.
Too much.
Same thing. I watched the first episode. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, it felt more torture porny and not. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I don't need to see this at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I pretty much only watch comedies now.
That's the way of the world now, yeah.
I only want to watch comedies. Kevin Toefel's got a great new website. You might want to spend some time checking that out.
I'm going to spend forever there. Kevin is doing God's work.
About?
Supporting the most important kind of computer technology any schmuck can use today.
I agree. Huh? About Chromebooks.com, and I'm sure we'll see more Christini coverage there.
You will.
Get ready for bruschetta or broschetta, as the chat room calls it.
It's a shame that the Chrome OS, Chromebooks just don't get the coverage and treatment from all the major tech sites. It's always an afterthought. So that's why I launched the site to focus just on this.
I'm seriously grateful you did, Kevin. Really.
And you said an interesting thing on this site. You said that you thought that Chrome tablets are going to be a game changer.
I do, because they're basically the first mobile device that has a full desktop browser experience, which is a big deal if you use web apps, which still has the mobile app experience of, in this case, Android apps. So nothing else does that. So this is why I sold the iPad Pro that I loved, great device, and got the Pixelbook.
Interesting.
Well, see, Kevin, the one problem I have is my Skype app, my Netflix, my Showtime, they are very, very flaky and don't work half the time on through Chrome.
Yeah, I know that, and in certain cases, some of the apps aren't 100%. It's ironic. I was literally just talking to somebody on my old team at Google yesterday, and we were chatting about Android apps and how they're working for me and how they're not. So I try and provide feedback, and that's one of the things I said. Yeah.
I think also there's not a lot of incentive for those companies because they don't feel copy protected on platforms that they don't like, not that aren't Windows and Macintosh. I'm sure they're just as copy protected.
Yeah, you cannot use Netflix or any DRM type content app on a Chromebook if you're in developer mode, for example.
Right.
A lot of those things won't work. Same if you unlock the bootloader of your Android phone. Same deal for the DRM keys.
Yeah.
So I totally get that. But
I think I think they're on the fence a little bit about these.
Yeah.
Oh, Stacy, they're right now. They're starting the IO Android Things scavenger hunt.
Get in there. Get in there. Go.
Android Things.
That's right. We didn't talk about Android Things. Well, Kevin and I will talk about it on our show. That's fine.
Well, anything you want to say briefly about it? Is it a big deal?
It's a big deal that it's finally out, but It's a quick glance. Yeah, the quick glance I had, it was like, it's a big deal for Google, but I don't think they go far enough yet. So I'm kind of like, But that's just me.
Okay.
Kevin?
It helps with the security aspect and updating devices, because Google will keep these devices updated for at least 3 years. And in IoT, keeping devices updated, there's no incentive for companies to do that either. So,
well, didn't Microsoft
just announce 10 years?
Yeah.
So, and Qualcomm actually has announced 7 years and 10 years respectively on their Snapdragon for embedded. So I actually looked at this, and Kevin and I were IMing beforehand. I was like, Google, this sucks. I think I did WTF Google, but can you pay to get additional support? Because honestly, that's not a game changer at all to me.
My understanding is yes, that you can. If you're a device maker, yes, after 3 years.
You probably talked about it on the show last week or the week before, but didn't Microsoft announce Azure, what is it, Sphere? Project Sphere?
Yes. Yes, we did a whole thing on that.
Okay. Because that, I think, is timely. I'd like to see Google do the same thing where, and I'm sure Qualcomm will, where they kind of can reissue, a low-end Chinese IoT manufacturer can use something like that to make a device that is, in fact, updatable, secure, and reliable. And consumers could buy it with some confidence, right? Is that?
Right. That's the idea. Now, wait, I have to ask, because I saw that they showed the Lenovo Smart Display.
Yes,
did they announce availability?
No.
They said July, I think.
July, yeah. And there'll be three to choose from, not just LG's, or Lenovo. And I think you and I both want the Lenovo one.
Yeah.
Well, one of us should probably get a different one. Paper, scissors.
Yeah,
I'll have my bot order a Lenovo one.
It's got a bigger screen than the Echo Show. I'm a big fan of the Echo Show. They have a 10-inch screen available. I think this is going to be, and they did do a demo on it. I think this is going to be a very interesting a product.
You know what was awesome about the Echo Show? I'm liking it more and more.
Oh,
and I think it's
it.
Actually 160 right now for Mother's Day. But I actually, last night Microsoft did a thing at the Chalouli Gardens, which is lovely. And I called my daughter on the Echo Show, and I just took her on a little tour with me.
Isn't that awesome?
And that was really fun.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. I might have to get an Echo Show for my daughter, because my mother will only talk to her on FaceTime, and Abby no longer has an Apple device of any kind. She's got a Pixel, and she's got a Samsung Note 8, and so she can't use FaceTime, and Mom won't use Duo. But Mom does have an Echo Show. I think if I got an Echo Show for Abby, then they could still talk to each other. That's the solution. I just answered my own question.
God, that we have to even think that hard is just wrong.
It just annoys me that Apple is so siloed. It's really sad. Hello, Bijan. How are you today? Hi. Oh, Normie is such a cute little doggy. And you keep him so clean.
Oh, he does that himself.
Oh, he does?
He needs a haircut, though.
They don't shed, right? Bijans don't shed.
That's correct. They're hypoallergenic. They do not shed.
Dog.
But so it's good for people without allergies. But would you believe it? He has allergies.
I believe
it. We have to give him medicine every day. The poor guy. Oh,
that's the problem with purebreds. Hey, does he smell like a dog?
Not really.
See, because that's the objection Lisa has, is that dogs have a doggy smell. They smell like dogs.
No, they don't.
But I remember our Bijan always smelled like ivory soap. And looks
that's weird.
like, all right. Thank you. Thank you so much, Stacy. Thank you so much, Kevin. You guys have fun on your All About IoT podcast. You can find that.
It's like the end of Lassie when Lassie used to wave.
Bye bye, Lassie. Jeff Jarvis.
I used to cry at the end of Lassie.
It's tequila time.
Made fun of me for it.
You know where I cried? At the end of Shane. That's where I cried. So, Jeff, go enjoy your margaritas at Google I.O.
I'm done with that.
Making it happen here. We appreciate it. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We do have, of course, a complete live coverage of the Google I.O. keynote. Father Robert Ballester and I did earlier today. You can find that on the Twit Live specials feed any minute now. We are going to continue on with security now, a little bit delayed. Tomorrow is Apple Day. We've moved everything out of the way so that we could do our coverage of Microsoft Build and Google I.O. So iOS Today begins at 9 a.m. Pacific on Wednesday. And MacBreak Weekly will follow immediately after, right around 11 a.m. Pacific, on most of these same Twit stations. We do This Week in Google normally on Wednesdays about 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Stop by, say hi. You can watch the live feed at twit.tv/live. Join the chat room at irc.twit.tv, or even join us in studio by emailing tickets at twit.tv. There's no charge. We'd love to have you. And if you want to download any show we do, we have on-demand audio and video for this show at twit.tv/twig. It's all on the website, twit.tv. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.